Good morning and welcome back to another episode of Breakfast with the Gators, part of the Stadium and Gale Network, and brought to you by our partner, Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA is out of Lake City, Florida, and they are a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. And you can give Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust and estate planning. Well, how's it going, fellas? How's everyone's weekend?
Great.
Not bad, man. Got back from a Christmas concert. It's that time of the year. Get to spend some time with family. Got to spend time with the Breakfast Boys on Friday night. So it was a good time. Got to watch our coach win a conference title.
Yeah, good weekend. Had a little Christmas party. Hung out, watched some football. And, yeah, excited to talk with the boys.
Yeah, three of us, Will was in town in Jacksonville, but surprisingly enough, did not show up to Dev's house to watch our coach, John Sumrall, win the AAC conference, clinch a berth into the college football playoff. And I'd just like to congratulate Florida, Ole Miss, and Virginia Tech for the openings in this hiring cycle for hiring a coach that has playoff experience. So I know there are a few schools in the SEC as well that had openings, but did not make as big hires as those three teams as previously mentioned. So a lot of fun. We got December, I think 20th, Dev, another watch party at your house to watch them go back to Oxford. I know they got blown out earlier in the year, but a much different Tulane team going to Oxford for round two.
Yeah, and a much different Ole Miss team too. Different coach. Don't know what that's going to look like. Different operation for them. Yeah, sounds like another watch party's in the works for December the 20th. Will, unfortunately, couldn't be caught dead up in Nassau County unless it was for dinner reservations because he was in Fernandina Beach the very next night. So we'll extend the invite one more time and see if we can get old Willie into up in Yulee and amongst the Breakfast Boys December the 20th.
Yeah, and Hunter made a nice observation before the show. It's he's been absent the last two episodes following his "Say No to Sumrall" tweet. So he might have disconnected himself from the podcast for a little bit. I know we've got some harsh questions for him. Certainly not the softball type he's accustomed to, and he might be avoiding us at this moment. But let's dive into the I believe there's a 31-21 victory for Sumrall on his Tulane wave over North Texas. Interesting enough, both coaches not going to be at their respective schools starting in 2026 with Eric Morris headed up to Stillwater and Oklahoma State. But Hunter, what would you see out of our coach? You know, North Texas, the most prolific offense in the country, I think points and off total offense, and they pretty much shut him down after that opening drive.
Yeah, energy is the first thing that came to my mind. I think saw a lot of Gator fans on Twitter. It's the first thing they notice is Sumrall on the sideline, man. He's a madman. I mean, the energy he coaches with is pretty cool to see, especially coming off of the Napier era. Obviously, Cool Common Collective was kind of his forte, and sometimes that can be good, but sometimes you want your coach to show some life, and Sumrall does that and then some. So that was cool to see. I had the early decision on the fourth and goal there that he went for. It was cool to watch him be aggressive there and it pay off with a touchdown. But I was impressed. I was impressed with what I saw. And like I said, the energy was just a breath of fresh air. It was good to see.
Yeah, you've watched North Texas this year, and they're the highest scoring offense in the country. Come out opening drive, scripted drive, Tulane, I want to say we – Tulane gets them to really work for their touchdown drive. I think it took like 7 minutes, which isn't really North Texas's game, but a well-scripted drive from Eric Morris. And then after that, I mean, 31 straight points. Tulane really, you know, retook control of the game after, you know, if you consider it a slow defensive start, I think that bend but don't break was kind of their game plan going in, and then obviously they bent and then they forced turnovers. So anytime you can force five turnovers in a game, chances are you're going to look up and be up 31-7 and really be pulling away in the conference championship. So I was really happy with how they looked. I thought that he managed the game well. He had good feel for when to go for it, when to take the points. There was a couple of times where we were calling out what we would do, and he matched what we said. You know, fourth and one, he went for it, and then I think it was like a fourth and four when it was a one score game that he could go up two scores. He went up two scores. So I thought that what I saw, sound decision making. I like to see the fire, the energy. He was running a little slow. Looks like maybe lost a step from his time at Kentucky, but he was sprinting down the sidelines with their defensive back after they recovered the fumble and returned it for about 25 yards. So got on his horse, showed a little bit of energy. Excited to see how they look in the first round of the playoff. But I thought that as far as dress rehearsals go, I thought that he looked the part on the sideline and has had an excellent first week as the coach of the Gators.
Yeah, I didn't get to see much of the game, but from what I did see, I saw him just losing his absolute mind on the sidelines for, I think, a bad call early in the game. Just needing three holdback guys. They're all coming to Gainesville, I hope, because that man was absolutely losing it. So, like Hunter said, you love to see that passion. Really awesome to see. And then saw some comments after the game in the press conference from Jake Retzlaff, the quarterback, which was really encouraging to see. He was raving about Summerall and the coach, saying how much he lets it be a player's locker room. But that's about all I saw. But I'll probably go back and watch a little bit, and looking forward to them play Ole Miss as well.
Well, fellas, we've got ourselves a special guest. We always joke about this is a family show. That's usually just due to our language. But with Will's absence, we are bringing along his brother, Paul Norris. Paul, welcome, my man. How are you doing?
Thank you for having me. You guys can hear me all right?
We hear you fine, my man.
All righty. Well, you know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be on Breakfast with the Gators. I got to join.
What would Will say right now? We've been talking about Wayne, talking about John Summerall. He started the Say No to Summerall movement on Sunday. We need him to answer for what he was tweeting a week ago. He hasn't been back on a show since. So tell us.
I've been telling him the whole time, we were not wrong. We've only been emotional. That's it. So we're not actually wrong about it. We were just a little early. That's about it. I love the fire that he shows. What else? What else would Will say? I don't know. I told him if I joined, he may never podcast again because I might just take a spot. So that's one thing. Man, Jackson's putting me on the spot here. He won't let me.
We are. What would you? Would you watch the game Friday night, Paul?
I caught a good piece of it. I thought that the defense came out with a lot of fire. I expected North Texas to put up a few more points. You know, they kind of got screwed on that one punt return, the one where he was it a fumble or a
kind of knocked off the guy's leg? You know.
Yeah, down at like the 2 yard line, but. You know, Coach John, their team shows some fight. I love the emotions on the sideline. We were with a bunch of people, and we started screaming, and all these people were like, what the heck are you yelling about? What happened in the Tulane game? And we're like, oh, nothing happened. You just see Coach John over there yelling and screaming. So that was good, but we're done with football right now. Let Coach John go coach in the playoffs, then come in, get a good transfer portal class. We're on to basketball. Hope the basketball team can keep going well. That's why we have the national championship hat on, and we'll see how he does.
And I think the most impressive thing so far, Summerall, is not just maintaining the composure within his locker room to go win a game like that to clinch it. It's basically, it was a playoff game Friday night. For him to recruit both recruiting classes on early signing day this past Wednesday, keep the Gators class intact, the Tulane class together, while also making some coordinating hires, and then go – whip North Texas like they did to, you know, clinch a berth into the college football playoff, the first time in Tulane history. So, I mean, just I can't wait till he's the Gators full-time coach. I mean, imagine what he's going to do when he's 100% locked in the orange and blue. And, I mean, it's exciting. I think we all had a little premature thoughts on this just because of the G5 Louisiana ties that we're also doomed by in the previous regime, but I think we're a lot more optimistic now, a week later.
Yeah, for them to come out and play as smooth and as well as they did, I thought that was super impressive. I mean, you got to think, he wins on Saturday night, takes the job Sunday morning, ends up doing a press conference in Gainesville Monday afternoon, flies in, coaches practice Monday morning, flies into Gainesville Monday afternoon, flies back to New Orleans Monday night. And then to have two separate signing days on Wednesday and then to coach a game on Friday, and for them to look as good and have as good of and sound of a game plan as they did, I came away extremely, extremely impressed. So yeah, and on top of that, making hires. I think that Brad White was announced on Tuesday, I believe.
Yeah, Tuesday. Yeah.
And then Buster Faulkner was on Friday, if I'm not mistaken. So just juggling, wearing two different hats, juggling 100 different things. I'm excited to see how the rest of the staff rounds in the form, and we can get into the coordinator hires a little bit later. But yeah, he knocked the first week out of the park. Knocked the first week out of the park with a skeptical fan base too, which is very important.
Sam brought up a really good point too. He mentioned the quarterback's comments after the game. It's funny. You'd think, I mean, obviously, a smaller school like Tulane, I guess you can't blame the guy too much making the jump, but you could understand if some of the players having maybe some mixed feelings. They're in the middle of this run trying to make a playoff run, and the coach makes the jump. But listen to what they said. Listen to the quarterback's comments. Listen to the assistant coach's comments. Listen to what these guys are saying, and it tells you a lot about them, right? It tells you a lot about what they think about him as a leader and how he's handled this, and how, like Devin said, he was able to juggle both those things but still have a game plan and have his guys ready to play. It says a lot about who he is as a coach.
I thought the recruiting, as I've gotten older, I'm not nearly as plugged in there, follow recruiting nearly as much as I do. But I thought that was incredibly impressive to keep two classes together. And he stuck true to what he said at his press conference. He's not going to take anyone from Tulane. He wants them to sign to Tulane, see that through. And to keep all of the top commits that we did have. And I'm not going to compliment the guy that's in the over here to me too often, but kind of goes to show you that Billy Napier did recruit the school, not himself, and we were able to kind of keep that class together. And yeah, I thought Summerall to have the signing class for both Florida and Tulane was very impressive, and to go win a conference championship days after, and incredible work.
Yeah, and some news Friday for our boy in black behind Sam. Sunbelt Billy the boy is reconnecting at James Madison. So
they're back. Summerall
takes a team to the playoff. It's coming to Florida. And now our fired coach has taken over a playoff-bound team as well. So all sorts of confusion this week. Paul, well, I mean,
how happy are you? Those poor Virginians that have to deal with Billy Napier now. I saw them on Twitter. They were asking for an offensive coordinator. You guys hired one, all right? You hired your offensive coordinator already. That's not coming, I can tell you that. So, I mean, good for Billy Napier. I honestly think he'll probably do pretty well being in the Sun Belt, back where he belongs. You know, he'll be able to recruit well. He'll get people to play somewhat up to their potential. He's just not a Power Four coach, but we'll see how he does. I don't really have that much ill will towards him where I hope he fails, but if he ends up taking JMU to the playoffs and they win a playoff game before we do, I will be very upset.
Well, he made sure to send out a good first message to the James Madison faithful.
Normal ChatGPT copy and paste.
Yeah, familiar message that we've all heard before. The culture precedes positive results. Champions behave like champions before they're champions. They have a winning standard of performance before they are winners. I guess he hasn't followed much James Madison football over the last 3 or 4 years. If he thinks that he has to strip it down and turn them into champions before he starts. But James Madison, they've been a machine with, I mean, the last two coaches that have gotten hired there, Kurt Cignetti, not bad, and then now Chesney going up to UCLA. So if there's any good situation for him to step into, I would say that James Madison back at home in the Sun Belt is just the perfect situation for a coach of Billy Napier's caliber.
Future Purdue head coach Billy Napier.
When that happens, you think he sends a farewell letter to the James Madison faithful online?
Of course. It will be funny to see, though, like what he's – because I think he will, because like Paul said, like I think he's probably going to do pretty well. Like he knows the Sun Belt and James Madison, they've been very good, and he's going to have resources. And, yeah, it's going to be crazy because someone will hire him.
He's got PFT commenter as a booster donating to the program. Like, that helps.
The one thing I'm curious about, though, is when he was at Louisiana, the transfer portal wasn't so crazy. And now, like, you get these freshmen that are coming to James Madison, they could be playing somewhere else in 2 years. So he's not going to have the time to develop the Osiris Torrance that he had at Louisiana. So that would be his downfall if I think he was not going to pan out there.
It's a good point.
Very valid.
Yeah. Dan, I thought you sent an interesting little note on Sumrall. Talking to our show when he got hired, now you're looking beneath and kind of opening up a little bit more about Sumrall and his time at – is this just his record at Tulane against the spread, or is that his all-time
– That was all 4 years as a head coach.
All 4 years at Tulane, at Troy and Tulane. So 35-18 against the spread as a head coach. We'll take that. 27-10 as a favorite, 8-8 as a dog, 18-7 against the spread at home, 11-8 on the road, and 6-3 on neutral site. So,
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't have the number that I sent in front of me, but I think he's only lost as a favorite outright twice in his entire career. So that's a pretty darn good record to have. And one of those was his first season on a Hail Mary. And then the other one was this year against UTSA. So really good record as a favorite. Not very many letdowns so far in his coaching career. So hopefully that kind of continues through this year. He'll have the swamp behind him for home games, and you go on the road and play in some tough environments in the SEC. So if you win games you're supposed to win, that takes you a long way.
Yeah, I remember those one possession games kind of made us a little bit nervous despite his good record. But once you dive a little bit deeper and see where he was metric-wise as a favorite, sounds like he won the games in a manner and a margin he was supposed to. So appreciate that tidbit. And let's dive into a little bit of the hires. You mentioned he's wearing two hats right now. Tuesday comes out and he hires Brad White. I think, that entire Kentucky staff is about to get turned over with Mark Stoops, who was, I believe, the previously longest tenured coach in the SEC until Sunday's firing. So we snagged Brad White, 7 years as defensive coordinator. Dev, what are your initial thoughts on bringing him to Gainesville?
Yeah, a couple of guys off of that staff have gotten picked up at other SEC schools. So they've certainly, were in high regard, even though that staff was kind of outgoing and had kind of come to the end of the ropes at Kentucky. I thought that, we kind of all said it, but anytime you've been in the SEC for 7 years at one school, you've had success. I think four of his seven defenses were top 25 defenses. And then obviously just from, the games that we watched between Florida and Kentucky the last 7 years, they had us in hell trying to figure out their defense. So I think Kentucky had a good identity to them that if Brad White is able to translate that into Florida, him and Sumrall, I think that defense should be taken care of between those two guys. I think he's got a track record in this conference of good defenses. I like that he's prepared to play against Georgia 7 years in a row. I like that he's had, pretty good success. There was one outlier, I think, where they, gave up 40-plus to Georgia. But the other six games during Brad White's tenure at Kentucky, I think Georgia only averaged like 21 points a game against them. So going to have access to more talent than he ever had before. And I think that it's a really good hire. When you look at, Billy's first staff and you have Patrick Toney coming in who had his experience at San Jose State and Louisiana Lafayette for a year and a half as their defensive coordinator, and you get a proven SEC coordinator like Brad White to come in, that's already a much better start to this staff than what we saw under the last regime.
Yeah, I think he entered in 2018, so we've beaten them 31 straight times. And his first year as defensive coordinator, he knocked off Dan Mullen to the Gators, I believe, in the Swamp. Even year, so I think that was a Swamp game. Sam, your thoughts on Brad White joining Sumrall, who have overlapped in coaching together at Kentucky?
Yeah, my thoughts exactly were that they didn't start beating us till that guy got to Lexington in that role. So, like you said, Devin, the differences of having that than Patrick Toney being the first hire. Like, I think Summerall's making it known he needs to hire an SEC level staff, and I think this hire solidifies it. I don't think it's a flashy hire by any means, but I don't think it needed to be, especially when he is a defensive side of the ball coach. So. I think some people are like, oh, you know, he said, I'm not going to hire my friends. And this was his friend because he coached with them. And, you know, they said that they're friends out in public, but I don't mind that one bit. That guy's had great defenses at Kentucky. Like you've mentioned, there's going to be a lot more talent here. And I'm very excited. I think it's going to be a very sound, stable hire. And I'm looking forward to it, especially with all the talent we already have on campus to try to fit that defense. You know, he's had some great edge rushers come out of Kentucky. Some other good defensive players have come out of Kentucky. So, yeah, I think it's a solid hire. And I don't think that was necessarily the hire you needed to nail. And I think you made a great hire.
And I think there's a difference between friends and respected colleagues. And I think that's what Brad White was to Summerall at Kentucky. And he's seen what he's been able to do. And with him on the market, I thought it was a fine hire. So offensive coordinator is what he needed to hit a grand slam on. That was the talk, you know, in all the press releases that were released. John Summerall made it known that this school is known for high powered offenses. And that's what he's going to do and bring them to Gainesville without really a track record of ever having a high powered offense at Troy or Tulane. He goes out and gets Buster Faulkner, arguably one of the hottest names out there. I believe he interviewed for the Memphis head coach job. A few other offensive coordinator openings were going after him. I think Clemson was in the mix as well. But Summerall able to land him, I believe, Friday. So we were all ecstatic about that. Paul, what were your initial thoughts? Have you done the homework beyond him at Georgia Tech?
I've done a little bit of the homework. I know he had Stetson Bennett, who was 5'10", running around there playing like he was a Heisman quarterback, and went, you know, God forbid, back to back with Georgia for the national title. So always good when you get someone like that who wants to be a Gator too. Cause yeah, he was getting other Power Four offers. And so when it's nice to have a coordinator choose us, and it was nice, like Devin said, of it's very refreshing to go out and actually hire proven coordinators rather than some project like Austin Armstrong, who is getting his first job ever basically, and it's to be the defensive coordinator of the Florida Gators. So we'll see. I want to, hopefully he can develop DJ. I hope DJ stays. Hopefully he works with the mechanics and everything, because I feel like DJ, every time he drops back to throw, has that, you know, country accent of Billy Napier in his head, and that's just not what you need right now. So we'll see. Hopefully he can do well. He needs to retain the offensive players he's got now and try to hit the transfer portal and go swing some of those offensive linemen from Georgia Tech.
Yeah, and Hunter, none bigger than your boy Jaden Ball. Just give us your overall thoughts on Buster Faulkner coming to Florida.
Yeah, first off, awesome name. Can't wait to be calling for Buster to dial it up on Saturdays, so that's fun. You mentioned it, hot commodity, right? Clemson coming after him. I saw A&M was coming after him. I'm sure other schools would too as the season comes to an end. And so to be able to land him, and I'm sure it was not cheap to do it, really shows you that Summerall means business. And then from offensive standpoint of just what Buster brings, it's adaptability. I think a lot of people see that he's the Georgia Tech offensive coordinator. They think Haynes King, they think power run, and in their mind, like, all right, we got a guy that just runs the ball and that's his focus. But when you start to dig in, it's a lot more than that. This guy adapts whatever school he's at, right? Paul mentioned Stetson Bennett and what he was able to do there and that year where he finished fourth in Heisman voting. And you see what he's done with Haynes King's career over the last 2 years. But he adapts to who he has at the quarterback position. Quez Watkins, receiver for the Eagles, that was his quarterback at Southern Miss, and he put up plenty of numbers with him. So it doesn't matter who's back there, he will adapt to the guys he has. I think, Jackson, you mentioned in the group chat, correct me if I'm wrong, he had a guy average almost 350 through the air at Arkansas State. I mean, it doesn't matter who's back there. He's going to adapt to his playmakers. And so, you know, while Haynes King and the power run comes to mind, he is going to get the best out of his guys. And like Paul said, I hope DJ stays and he's able to work with him on the mechanics and turn him into the playmaker we know he can be. So just really excited for Buster to come to town and get to work.
Yeah, and that was a name Lovelace and I brought up last December for Napier to hire if, you know, had that ultimatum of he's got to hire an offense coordinator. Obviously, that never came to fruition, but that's a name we wanted a year ago in this cycle. So, Arkansas State, I believe he broke multiple school records on total offense, passing yards, passing touchdowns, first downs in the season. At Middle Tennessee State, he had, I believe, 3 years, about 190 yards rushing a game. I think 1 year over 200. And then his final year there, he threw for over 4,000 yards. So the ability to adapt is what strikes us as an opportunity for us. If Lagway stays, who I believe has a new quarterback coach, was that a rumor or is that confirmed? I believe it's Jared Goff's quarterback coach now is who he's under.
Yeah,
that's right.
So hopefully some development there. Now with Buster Faulkner, I don't know if Faulkner's going to be coaching the quarterbacks as well and being hand-on in that quarterback room. But, yeah, exciting. Thank God. We finally got a real player caller in Gainesville for the first time, it feels like, in a decade, but it's really been since Dan Mullen's been here.
Yeah, it seems like the plan is for him to coach the quarterbacks too. I worried a little bit about the idea that Buster Faulkner is going to have to change from what he did at Georgia Tech, and we're asking Summerall at the same time to also change what he did at Tulane. And the combination of, okay, what we've watched the last 4 years at Tulane and Troy, what we've watched the last couple of years with Buster Faulkner at Georgia Tech, we're wanting both of these guys to change what we've watched them do for the last several years. That's something that concerned me. And then the more that we've read into Buster Faulkner, the more that I've liked what I've heard about how he is adaptable and how he does change based on his personnel and the guys that he has, running his offense at quarterback. So the adaptability part has me excited. It has me thinking the way Dan Mullen used to change, you know, his offenses and the way that they looked based on if he had, you know, Kyle Trask at quarterback or if he had Dak Prescott or Nick Fitzgerald at quarterback. So hopefully we see that kind of adaptability. I'm excited to see what the offense looks like. And, you know, he said all the right things during his introductory press conference, but I think that these hires, especially when you're on an offensive coordinator cycle where Ohio State's looking for a coordinator, Oregon's looking for a coordinator, Texas A&M's looking for a coordinator, Ole Miss, another playoff team, is looking for an offensive coordinator. All these major playoff schools are looking for offensive coordinators, and our guy Summerall was able to go out while he's still coaching and focusing on his playoff run, and he was able to land his top choice or, you know, one of his top choices at offensive coordinator. So super impressive hire. There's a lot of really good scouts and film guys that are in love with Buster Faulkner's offense and the things that he's done. The creative ways that he's designed his run game at Georgia Tech and the route tree that he's bringing to Gainesville. So really, really excited to see what this offense looks like and to see how they fit it around DJ or fit it around another guy. Aaron Filo at Georgia Tech's been a name that's kind of gone around that might be looking to come along with Buster Faulkner. So whoever it is at quarterback next year, I think that they're in good hands. They're with a coach that's going to put them in a position to be successful, which is exciting for us as fans.
Yeah, and I think what we hit on with Allie Peak on the show earlier in the week, this is before the Buster Faulkner news got released, but that 05 season, we go on the road to Alabama, get thumped 31-3. Urban and Dan Mullen are trying to run their spread offense. They realize we don't have that personnel to do so. They get together, revamp the offense to that more pro-style look under Chris Leak, utilize the fullback with our boy Billy Latsko, who's been on the show, get him more involved. And having someone with the ability to adapt who might need to change on the fly is certainly going to be very beneficial for us in Gainesville. If something's not working 1 week, he's got the ability to go deeper in the playbook, change the scheme a little bit, and fit it to what our personnel is going to look like. So a little bit of recruiting left. I know we got another signing period in February. I don't know how many more high school targets are on the board, but obviously that transfer portal opens up January 2nd or January 3rd. I know some guys are already entering it. I know it's not official, but there's releases out there. So they got a full month to do their homework and go identify which pieces are in the facility they're going to be able to retain and what's going to fit what he wants to run and go ahead and get a head start in the portal and find additions that are going to make an impact on the Gators next year. So anything else hit on coordinators wise, or do you guys want to jump into playoff talk with the 12 team release that got dropped Sunday around noon?
Yeah,
Tulane's the pick, right? I said Tulane's the pick, right? Tulane win the Natty. We're going to be along for the ride.
Yeah, what a hell of a recruiting pitch that's going to be for Summerall here in Gainesville. If he can lead the Green Wave to a national title, why can't he do it for the Gators?
Hey, he beat the ACC champions already, so that's a good start. He beat the ACC champs with a G5 team. Imagine what he'll do once he gets an SEC team.
With his former quarterback.
Yeah.
It is funny that he pulled Ole Miss of all the schools.
Oh, yeah. I had a nice tweet that got into LSU. I don't know if they just searched Lane Kiffin's name in the Twitter search bar 24/7, but I congratulated us and Ole Miss for hiring two playoff experience coaches in Pete Golden and John Summerall, while Lane Kiffin gets to watch from his home in Baton Rouge. They certainly did not like that tweet. So,
hey Jackson, I think Tulane Ole Miss got the 3:30 draw. What time do you think they're going to start tailgating out in the Grove? 3:30? I mean, there's not a lot of time.
2:30 local. 2:30 local. That makes a huge difference. Local. An hour.
Ooh. Oh my goodness.
Maybe
get there by noon.
Maybe after brunch. You got to get brunch over with, and then once brunch is done, they can, maybe show up about 1:30 in the afternoon and.
I thought you guys had just made up with Ole Miss Twitter after this Lane Kiffin fiasco. Now you're just going to get them all back mad at you again.
I was going to say that too, Paul, but I think they do. And the Velvet Ditch, how they say no one ever leaves. You have a population of 26,000. Everyone who goes to that school leaves that godforsaken town eventually. So,
I will say before we get into Tulane specifically against Ole Miss. I have taken on my normal December moniker, Big Dev, Big Ten Dev, whatever you want to call it. I'm just going to go ahead and claim Ohio State, Indiana, Oregon. I will claim Ole Miss and Tulane too. Anybody but Georgia this time of year. So that's the fandom from here on out. Whatever makes the toughest path for the Georgia Bulldogs is the path I'm looking to take.
Texas Tech sleeper.
I think Texas Tech is they got the 4 seed, so they'd play Indiana in the semifinals. I think they could give everybody in the 12 team playoff hell with their defense. I don't know if you guys watched that Big 12 championship yesterday, but they've eaten BYU's lunch both times they played them. I think Sam, did you text us that all 12 of their victories are by 20 or more points? I think Florida State did it in 2013, and then Alabama did it, I don't know, 7-8 years ago as well. Both of them ended up in the national championship game. Alabama lost, but nonetheless, just what an impressive year out of those guys.
Yeah, they beat teams. Only guy that beat them this year is my guy Kenny Dillingham. Crazy.
Right.
Oregon's going to beat them when they play them. They roll through James Madison, and then – that 20-point win streak, I think, is enjoy it while they can. I'm not a Texas Tech hater. I'm just not a Texas Tech believer.
All right, let's go around the table real quick. Who do you think is kind of your sleeper that maybe, let's just say, that didn't get a bye that could make their way into the national championship game? I'll start with you, Sam.
Oh, I mean, all the way to the Natty. I don't want to give I would say if you're saying Natty sleeper, I'll go the winner of Miami, Texas A&M.
Well, who's going to win?
Well, that's what I don't say. I could really see Miami winning that game. So when you said sleeper, I was going to say Miami, but then you said Natty. I think Texas A&M might fare better in the long haul if they're able to get through. I know that's very contradictory, but I don't know. I really can see Miami winning that game. I don't know. I hate to say it, but
I can't wait to see Carson Beck with Cassius Howell breathing down his neck. So
unfortunately, I agree with Sam. I think Miami has probably the easiest path to get to the Final Four out of any of the teams that are 8 or higher. I think as long as Carson Beck doesn't turn the ball over, I think Reuben Bain can wreak havoc. I'd rather watch, you know, be forced to watch grass grow outside than watch Miami win a national title, but I think they could make it as a sleeper.
Very unfortunate. They whisper your successes and they shout your failures. I think before the season I said that Miami would be better than LSU because of their lines of scrimmage and how good they are on the offensive and defensive line. And that kind of turned out to be true. I think that they, you know, had a couple – I'm not in the business of complimenting Miami, but they really kind of – they struggled and then figured it out down the stretch. Obviously, their head-to-head win over Notre Dame kind of got them into the playoff. But I think that that's a dangerous team. I would not be surprised if they went into College Station and beat Texas A&M. I don't think that they're better than Ohio State. I still think Ohio State and Georgia are probably the two best teams in the country. Even after Indiana beat Ohio State last night. I think that whoever wins that Final Four game is going to win the national championship. But I do think that of those non-bye teams, I don't think Alabama or Oklahoma is any good. I think Oregon's good, but and they have an easy path. So I think that they're going to end up in the Final Four. But I do think that, you know, Indiana beat them in Eugene already this year. So that's a side of the bracket that I think Indiana's confident that they can, you know, make their way out of. Even though Indiana will be out talented against Oregon, against Oklahoma or Alabama, so that'll be interesting to see how they fare against an SEC team. But in the bottom half of that bracket, man, I don't think that Tulane or Ole Miss can beat Georgia. I think that Miami and Texas A&M is the most interesting game in that first round. I think Miami wins it, and then I think you end up seeing Georgia and Ohio State play in the de facto national championship. I think whoever wins that game ends up winning the national title.
Hunter, who's your sleeper? As we were,
Dev just went on a monologue and ran through the whole bracket. Oregon would be my sleeper, which you mentioned. I think, you know, the only loss this year is Indiana, undefeated 13-0 team. They have a lot of talent. Obviously, Dan Lanning has experience. Obviously, it didn't go very well for them last time they were in the playoff. But I'm looking at Oregon making a run outside those top four teams. But interested to see how far they can go. I do agree with Dev. If we're getting past the sleeper talk into who we think has a chance to win it, I think that class of Ohio State, Georgia, and Indiana is above everyone else. And I'd be shocked if the field over those three teams were to win the Natty.
My bad, guys. Somebody has to take on Will's role when he's missing shows.
Yeah, if only we had his brother.
I'll say, Dev, I disagree with you. I'll take Oklahoma as a sleeper to get to the national championship game out of the teams that don't have a bye. I think defense can win you championships. That's still true in this day and age. They've got some impressive wins. I know their offense has sputtered really the last 3 weeks of the season. They still got John Mateer at quarterback. You know, any given night, he could get hot, and them going up against Indiana. Well, first, they got to get past Alabama. But if they play Indiana, I think two really good defenses, two pretty good quarterbacks. But in terms of a sleeper, I'll take Oklahoma to get to the Final Four and championship game.
Their offense has just been so bad. And maybe these couple weeks will get Mateer healthy. It's just hard to imagine Oklahoma making that kind of run. But
I could say that with any team that did not get a bye, but if we had a pick, it's Oklahoma. Real quick, before we jump to Gator basketball, name your national champion. Dev, go around the table.
I'll go Ohio State. Like I said, I do think that Georgia and Ohio State are the two best teams in the field. I think Indiana they've been so impressive, and I'm really like – it's one of the coolest stories in the history of college football, I think, what they've done. It felt a little bit like they accomplished what they set out to accomplish in the Big Ten championship. And I think that it's going to be hard to replicate that through a playoff run. So give me Ohio State beating Georgia in the Final Four and then Ohio State repeating in the national title. They're not going to miss 27-yard field goals every game.
Paul?
I can't take Georgia. I'd like to take Tulane, but I won't. I'll take Indiana. I'd rather see them win than anybody else, unless if it's not going to be, you know, John Sumrall. I love what Cignetti has done. It's honestly just like the coolest story of you come in there and you call your own shot and you go in there and everybody expects, okay, we'll be 7-6 at best as long as we beat Purdue. And he says, no, I'm going to go beat Ohio State, beat Penn State, beat Oregon, beat all these other teams because I win. I'm the best coach in the country. So I would like to see them win. I think the Fernando Mendoza story is great. I think they have a great defense. Hopefully they get the Omar Cooper guy healthy. As he got hurt last night. So they'll need him, but rather him than those bastards at Georgia. Anybody but Georgia.
Hunter? Agree on anybody but Georgia. I'll take Ohio State as well. I'm kind of with Dev. One, it's hard to replicate it, right? You just beat them, and it was an impressive win, and what they've done is really impressive. It'd be hard to do it twice if that's what it came down to. It'd be an awesome matchup to see Indiana, Ohio State in the national championship. I'll be rooting for Indiana, like Paul said, but Ohio State would be my pick.
Oh, my turn. Sorry. So we saw this the second year of the 12-team playoff, and last year Ohio State went on this great run, won the home game, plateaued that into a big win over Oregon, and went on a great run. And I like to think history might repeat itself here in a team that doesn't have that first-round bye, and I'm going to go with Oregon. So why not get a little weird? Give me Oregon. They used that first win against James Madison, bless their hearts, but use that to really roll the ball. And I think it was Hunter that said they've learned from their mistakes from last playoff, the woes, and Dan Lanning's got a little bit of a switch to him. Yeah, give me Oregon. Why not? Let's be weird.
I like it, Sam. I'll take the winner of Texas Tech, Indiana in the Final Four. Kind of two different ways these programs have conducted themselves, with Indiana just going out and getting the best coach out there with anybody not really knowing who he was. And then you got Texas Tech on the other hand, who just got some billionaires together and says, just dump all the cash into a roster, and now they're getting a bye and Big 12 champion. So I'll be rooting for coach too. They got Joey McGuire's a great coach.
Well, you can't.
Who's going to win that game?
Who's going to win the game?
I'll take Indiana, and I'll have Indiana winning the national championship.
None of us want to say what deep down we're all kind of thinking a little bit, and I'm not going to say
Georgia's damn good. Georgia's damn good.
Gunnar Stockton is not a national championship winning quarterback.
He doesn't have the look of a national champion winning quarterback.
He doesn't. Alabama won a national championship with your name, Gunnar. Nick Saban won a lot of titles with not national championship caliber quarterbacks. So,
where's the national championship at this year? What stadium?
Miami. Is it in Miami?
I don't know. Just ask Will where he canceled his hotel reservations from like last December.
Oh, I know next year's in Vegas, I believe. So we should be getting rooms. Sam, we'll come crash your pad.
Play some golf. That should be friendly for the pockets.
Yes. But let's get into some basketball talk before we wrap up. I don't think we had a show before our game in Cameron Indoor. Gators go on the road, fall to Duke, I think the third-ranked Blue Devils, 67-66. Just kind of a wide range of emotions watching this one. Down 12, Duke ends the first half on a 17-5 run, goes up 12 at the break, comes out in the second half, goes up 15, and then Alex Condon and the boys just turned it up to another level. And eventually took the lead with, I think, 31 seconds left off of Boogie Flan triple. Hunter, what are your thoughts? What did you see out of the Gators despite our third loss? I know our next loss would match last year's loss total already, and we're still not even really – we just entered the halfway point of non-conference play. But overall, what did you see out of the Gators?
I saw the boys fight. As we all did, we saw him fight. It looked like it was going to get away from us. And for a second, I mean, it nearly did, right? Hard to come back against a team like that in a place like that, down by 15, 16, whatever it was. To watch them fight like that in the second half was impressive. Tommy Haas is insane. He's ridiculous. I mean, watching him play is a pleasure. It's like last year whenever Walter Clayton would have those games. I remember we'd send texts just saying, appreciate it. Appreciate watching him play, because soon he'll take off the jersey and you won't be able to do it anymore. That's how I feel when I watch Tommy play. So it was a joy to watch him. Boogie, obviously, hitting that big shot. It hurts because it feels like a shot like that in Cameron Indoor, a three-pointer to take the lead and potentially take them down, is a moment that we would look back on towards the end of the season as what catapults him. And who knows, it may still be that moment. But then obviously the final possession there, ball off his leg, Todd trying to get a timeout in there, savvy move by coach. It was tough. It's tough. It shows you, obviously, you got to put 40 minutes together. I think that's Todd's message to the guys as we go into this UConn game. You gotta put a complete game together. And that first half offensively was just so poor that even though we did overcome that deficit, it ended up being too much. So it was tough. It looked loud, Jackson. I'm sure that Boogie Flan three-pointer, that place got quiet. And then when they hit the three to take the lead back, I bet it erupted.
Well, the crowd pop for the Boogie Flan three was pretty impressive. I was told by several Duke fans in attendance that was the most road fans they've seen in a long time in Cameron Indoor. So shout out to the Gator Nation that drove in from wherever, from Atlanta, from Charlotte. There's a large Gator contingency really everywhere in the country. So we haven't played there since 1998. It was great to see the Gators make that trip. But yeah, when Isaiah Evans hit that three with 18 seconds left, it was deafening. I've never heard an arena, a football stadium, quite like that in my life. You couldn't even see straight. It was so loud. It was pretty incredible what those Cameron crazies can do. But we certainly gave it our all in the crowd with the Gator fan base. We tried our best to get those boys home with a victory, but a 1-point loss. Dev, what did you see out of the boys?
Yeah, I was proud of the fight. You get down by 15 points against a top three caliber Duke team in Cameron Indoor. There's not very many teams in the country with the maturity to be able to fight back from that. I thought that you saw our front court play like you expect our front court to play. I thought that they were dominant. They, handled Boozer. You know, he went for 16 in the first half, and then I think we held him to 16 for a pretty good portion of the second half. He wound up, I think, in the 20s. But I thought that I was proud of the front court. Thought Boogie Flan started figuring it out the mid-range game. He looked more comfortable, more confident, and obviously hit the big shot there at the end. But I keep going back to, we have three losses, and two of them are two of the three best teams in the country. On a neutral floor that's not really a neutral floor out in Vegas and then in Cameron Indoor. And you're competitive, you're in it, have a chance to tie or take the lead at the end of both of those games. And the ball just doesn't get the ball doesn't bounce your way. The shot doesn't fall. The game that's disappointing out of our non-conference slate so far is the TCU game, only because I didn't feel like we came out ready to play. We talked about it before, but that was the second smallest team in the country, and you let them, match you in rebounding. I think we out-rebounded them by like two. So we just didn't come to play hard that night. Cross-country road trip, Thanksgiving Day, just didn't come to play. So that's a disappointing one. But as far as the Duke game and then going forward into the UConn game, I think that I think that this UConn game is key. One of these top 10 matchups, we need to get one on the board. Obviously we have a couple of decent wins against Miami and Florida State, but one of these high one quad 1A type wins on a stage like Madison Square Garden, I think that not beating Duke just ramps up the intensity and the pressure for us to win this game. So,
well, Dev, in order to beat UConn, we're going to need a little bit more stout play out of our guards. Paul, another abysmal shooting night by our boy Doni, number one. 1 for 10, 1 for 6 from deep. What are your thoughts on the Princeton transfer Xavier Lee so far?
Well, he's making me look bad because I keep telling all these people, I'm like, all right, you shoot 37% from three or whatever at Princeton. There's no way you can go and shoot like 10%. I'm like, it's statistically impossible. You have to make one eventually. And he has proven me time and time again, that doesn't have to happen. But, I don't understand. He looks like he's out there shooting AAU, ready to play for the Harlem Globetrotters, making TikToks. It angers me a lot. But I know Todd doesn't want to do it. It seems like the team likes him, but the guy's got to sit on the bench. He's got to come off the bench for like 15 minutes a game. get the ball out of his hand. Urban's been playing so much better than him. And I don't know if it's just like the dynamic of the way the team works, of why he's still starting, why he's still being a primary ball handler. Like, the guy's got to sit on the bench. You have to do something to change his mentality, to light the spark. You know, we were playing FSU and the guy was 0-7, 0-8, and he's over there laughing with the FSU sideline. Like, that should not happen. Lock into the game. So, I don't know. In terms of Boogie, it was a lot better against Duke. I liked that he was going to the mid-range much more often. He was actually being aggressive for once, rather than we drive to the basket and then we just dribble back out to the outside and just do nothing with the ball. And we sit there and hold it for 30 seconds. So it was very frustrating to lose that game, especially when you hit that late three and then you're coming back down with a chance to win the game and you have a timeout and the original screen that's at the top of the arc doesn't work. Like, you should be spamming timeout there. But, you know, it's the way the bounce goes. I still think this is a very good team. Well, I think they're going to beat UConn somehow, some way. We're going to find the way to put the ball in the basket. So we'll see as they go.
Yeah, to your point, to not call a timeout there, to me, is really, looking back on it, I think Todd knows he probably should have done that. And
He just waited too long. I mean, when you're running that action and the first screen doesn't work and he looks lost at the top of the arc, you have 13 seconds left. You should be saying timeout, timeout, if you're not going to call it like as soon as you're coming up the court. But then, you know, on the other side, you have a foul to give. I know you get caught in a screen action, but so not to hammer Todd, but there's a couple questionable decisions there.
For sure, 100%. And no, like you mentioned, Boogie, the mid-range game, that was nice to see, and him to hit that shot. And it's tough how it unfolded. One, at the time, I think it called in for him to dribble it off his foot. But, like, you know, he didn't have his running mate with him. You know, he's doing it all by himself, really, as a guard. And, you know, you do have the splashes of Urban, but I really don't think Boogie's on the court for all that one, because, you know, he's got to get some rest. But tough to lose a game like that, you know, it really is. Well, that would have been a great win. That would have been awesome.
He also needs to be smarter about his fouls. In the first half, he got two fouls, and the second one was on some jump ball, and he had to sit out for like 7 minutes in the first half. You cannot do that as a D1 point guard who expects to be a lottery pick. You got to play smarter than that. Just can't.
We've been pretty bad as a team this whole year with our foul trouble and just situational.
Yes. And I'm not here to complain about the refs, but the refs in Cameron were absolutely awful. Terrible. I don't know how these guys still get paid to referee basketball.
Yeah, that's a good point. We haven't even touched. There was some. Man, the game was a game.
Lost by win on a game where you had
there was a few ones. Ever.
That was crazy.
It said you lose by 1 point in a game with the most clear goaltend of all time.
Tommy Howell gets called for a flagrant foul. That's him protecting the basketball, which Cameron
was worse than a flagrant.
It was a technical somehow because they
get started on the dead ball technical. You get to go choose whoever you want to shoot the free throw. So somehow, some way, you get to choose your best free throw shooter rather than having someone with bricks for hands go shoot it.
And what
if that was us? Micah would have been on the line. Like,
and what about when they hit a three, but there was an under the basket foul called? That all of a sudden happens. The foul happened before the shot, so they got the basket to count and the ball. I mean, it was atrocious. It was a terrible, terribly officiated game.
Todd did admit after the game that, you know, you got beat Duke by 10 in Cameron because you're not going to get the 50-50 calls. We only beat him by about 5 or 6 that night. He had some choice words for those refs all night, and certainly so did us sitting behind the bench letting them have it. Just an all-time bad night with the referees. And it feels like we're the defending national champions, and we haven't gotten one whistle this entire season.
Respect, Todd. Like, it's ridiculous. You just won a national title. John Shire has nothing over there, and he gets to get a review, not a challenge, a review, because he just asked for it. That's a challenge. He already used his.
The whistle against TCU was awful, too. I mean, it's just – it's ridiculous.
It wasn't great against Arizona either.
Just brings me back to these refs like Doug Shows and Tony Valentine and Ted Valentine, Tony Green. I don't understand how they get repeatedly asked to referee basketball games. They're terrible.
It's and I doubt with the home environment we're about to get inside Madison Square Garden for UConn and our boy Hurley, it's not going to get much better moving forward. So big one in Madison Square Garden, Tuesday night, 9 o'clock. I believe it's part of the Jimmy V Classic. Second game of that evening, and I know they got solo ball. They're seventh in KenPom. This will be our third opponent in the top seven of KenPom this year, which is pretty remarkable considering this is our ninth game. But yeah, this is a must win. There's no other way to spin it. You got to go up there. It's going to be a hostile environment with the primary folks being UConn attendees, but you gotta go prove it now with your guard play we've had so far. We gotta go find an identity, and there's not a better place to do it than the Mecca of basketball.
Yep, the SEC is a little down this year too. I think that we'll benefit from that in the fact that I think that we will. I still think we're the best team in the SEC. Despite some of the struggles during the non-conference play, but then you got to question whether you're going to get those same kind of opportunities that you got last year to get the quad one type wins that you played every single night in the SEC a year ago.
Yeah, and if you're watching this team from afar, and we got to March, and let's just say they weren't our favorite team, but we got hot February, March, we'd be looking at this team as a three or four seed and the brackets, like, wow, this team is – they struggled a little bit in the early portion of non-conference schedule, but they only lost by six to Arizona. They lost by one to Duke. You know, they beat UConn, and they kind of find themselves in conference play getting a little hot. So just because we're fans
– you look at them as a three seed that can't shoot but has the best front court in basketball that will go and take any team to the brink, but they're going to end up losing in the Elite Eight on some buzzer beater whenever they can't hit it. That's what a non-biased person would say.
Correct.
Yeah. That's a good evaluation. Yeah. I think we're slotting right in that 3-4 area right now, and I kind of like it.
But I still think they have the potential to go back-to-back. You just got to shoot the ball better, which easier said than done. But
by March, we're going to be that nightmare 3 or 4 seed that no one seed wants to be facing in the second weekend.
Especially with all the experience that our guys will have. You know, experience is what takes you through March. That's why Walter Clayton was just so good. He had the experience to go make the shots and create for himself.
Imagine having to see our front court that all have national championship rings that they're bringing with them on the bus. That's a nightmare for whoever is the poor 1, 2, or 3 seed that has us in their bracket come March.
Yeah. Gators will be fine. Gators will be fine. Well, guys, we appreciate you listening. Once again, make sure you're liked and subscribed to our YouTube page. Follow us on Twitter at BreakfastWTG. Shout out to our boy Paul Norris for jumping on last minute to join us on the show.
Thanks Seth for having me.
His brother. Maybe, we might have a fan vote after this. Make sure you guys comment if we should switch to Norris Brothers seats and have Paul on full time or not. But.
Well, people sometimes get tired of Will's rants. I know I do, but they just had to listen to me yell about Duke and the refs for 5 minutes. So they should see me when I'm not on a podcast.
Somebody's got to put Florida first.
I haven't even gotten into Scott Strickland. Which, real quick on Buster Faulkner, Georgia Tech fans were saying that this was a downgrade hire or like a lateral move to Florida. Scott Strickland, how dare you let Georgia Tech fans say this about the University of Florida? It is embarrassing. I hope he finds this.
Thank you, Paul.
Appreciate it, Paul. Thanks, guys, and we'll see you again for another episode of Breakfast with the Gators. Go Gators.
Go Gators.